Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Goddess Alive Radio. Happy Monday. Can we say that? This is the last Monday before Mercury goes retrograde this week. You know, I feel like I should have an air horn at this point because of my multiple tech fails, but I remain positive. And your humble hostess, Kimberly Moore from Mother House of the Goddess, with you tonight. Retrograde. I'm working on a blog post called Living Life in Retrograde because we have so many planets in retrograde. Mercury's getting ready to go. And, you know, the astrology blogs have kind of been a mixture this week and the past couple weeks of doom and gloom and positivity. So we're going to remain on the side of positivity. And I encourage everybody, as we get ready to go into that Mercury retrograde, to really take some time to reflect and contemplate, see what you need to reset, what do you need to renew, you know, what is happening with you, and what shifts do you need to make. And as we look at all of that, it's a great time to be living life in retrograde. So happy to be here with you tonight on a Monday. We have a very special guest, Anne Newkirk-Niven, who is the editor of Witches and Pagans, Crone, and as many of our audience are familiar with, Sage Woman Magazine. We're going to bring Anne on in just a second, and I just want to remind everybody that New Moon is scheduled for May 6th, and Lara will be doing the Goddess Lakshmi live video ritual. And this month we have Ishel on tap for Goddess Full Moon Group. So make sure you hop over to mysteryschoolofthegoddess.net, motherhouseofthegoddess.com, and get signed up. As we have the new Seeking the Goddess course, that is a wonderful collection on mysteryschoolofthegoddess.net, and you can check out all of the great offerings from our instructors and contributors. So, without further ado, let's bring Anne on. We're going to talk about publishing, Goddess and Pagan Publishing, and the state of our interwebs and how Anne has managed to capture her corner of the publishing world. Anne, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
How are you?
Oh, it's just fine. I just had a good day putting in... Doing a lot of email catching up and all that kind of good stuff that we all do. It's a good thing to do right before that Mercury retrograde hits. Because believe me, if you left someone behind, coming tomorrow, they're going to want to know what the heck happened.
Absolutely.
So I always do an email catch up sweep through my voluminous inbox the day before Mercury retrograde. If I remember, which of course I did today. Ha ha. Hooray for me. I don't always remember to do that, but I try.
Oh,
okay,
my
well, yeah. So ask away anything. I'm an open book.
Oh, good. Well, tell us, you know, for our audience, and as I said, most of our audience is probably very familiar with Sage Woman Magazine, which has been a staple, I mean, for so many of us in the goddess spirituality community for years. So tell us how you kind of got started with all of this.
Oh, okay. Well, that's totally cool. First of all, Sage Woman did start in 1986. I am actually the third publisher and the fourth editor. So I cannot claim that I started her, because that wasn't me. That was a woman named Carol Schieber in Hillsboro, which is actually very close to where I currently live, here in Oregon. And she did like four or five issues, and then she handed off, reputedly, Linnea told me, literally in a shoebox, which is to say that she had all of the names and addresses of the subscribers on index cards in a shoebox. And so she handed that off to Linnea Weatherstone, who many people may know. And Linnea was the publisher through issue number 12, and during her time as publisher and editor, I happened to be working for my husband's print shop, which was a little hole-in-the-wall print shop in Point Arena, California, which no one has ever heard of, and that's okay. Smallest incorporated city in the state. And we were looking for jobs, basically, for people to do their printing for them. And it was kind of a little specialty of ours to do printing of what back then used to be called zines, which is self-published little magazines, which was a really hot thing. Actually, it's still kind of a hot thing, but it's more of a niche now. Back before the internet, a lot of people published their own little zines. And instead of having a blog, you would publish a magazine. And so we tried to do that, and I picked up a copy at Sage Woman at a woman's goddess/woman's bookstore in Santa Rosa, California. Everybody remember those women's bookstores? Yay!
Yes.
They're still hanging on. Anyway, I picked it up and I fell in love with it immediately and drove home and cold called Linnea and said, "You don't know me from Adam or Eve, as the case may be, but wouldn't you really, really, really like to give us your printing job?" And as it so happens, she told me that the last issue had been printed upside down and backwards or something horrific of that nature, and that her printer was giving her a lot of trouble about correcting the errors, and she was not happy, not a happy camper. At that time, she was living in Santa Cruz, and so she said, yes, ta-da. So that was my introduction to Sage Woman. I loved it right away, and we enjoyed the work and all that, and we worked with Linnea very happily for, I think it was, I don't know, about, I'm going to guess around 2 or 3 years. And then at some point, Linnea was having some issues with the finances of the magazine, and I offered to buy it. My mother had recently died, and that left me with a very small inheritance, which I split with my 3 sisters and brothers. But it was just enough money to pay off my grad school debt and also to make an offer on Sage Woman. So we came to an agreement, and she continued to work for me as the editor of Sage Woman for another, I believe it was 3 years. And then we came to a parting of the ways, and I became the editor as well as the publisher. So I've been working as the editor on Sage Woman for, let me actually look. I'm going to go over here and look at the magazines because there's a stack of them right here and see what issue that was. Da-dee-da-dee-da. Okay, so it was after water. Here I am perusing through. So you can just imagine me perusing through the list here. Hold on.
That's great.
Oh, this is too far away for me to actually pull the phone. But let's see, where we left off was the water issue, which says it was in the year 9992. See, this is what we did back then, is that we didn't want to acknowledge, the patriarchal way of doing things. So everybody put a 9 instead of a 1. So it was 1992, but, we called it 9992 to celebrate 10,000 years of women's agriculture. It was a little counterculture back then.
Yeah,
we all kind of dropped that when we hit 2000, because it would have been bizarrely awkward. What would we have said? It was a year 11,000. No one would have had any idea what we were talking about. So that's about the time we switched over. So it was in 1993 or so that I became the editor as well as the publisher of Sage Woman, and so I guess that's been a while. That makes a quarter century if I'm doing the math in my head properly.
I was going to say this, so that's so interesting, because I'm fairly certain, and I probably started reading Sage Woman in maybe 94. So,
yeah, well, that would have been very early in my tenure, so mm-hmm. yeah. Anyway, so, I did actually end up having an editor for a couple of issues between Linnea and me, and the money just wasn't there. The money just was not there to pay an editor. So I stepped into the breach pretty much out of necessity and found out I really liked it. So here I am 25 years later, still keeping on, keeping on, as they say. We didn't make any money at all for, I think, about, I'm going to say about 7 or 8 years, roughly, before I started paying myself. But fortunately, there were other things that we were doing, and we were just, kind of teased, and it was cool, and life was cheap, and and all
and that.
And
I,
yeah.
Wanted it.
That's right. So that all worked out. And I don't know how much of the intervening, you know, tales of woe and intrigue you want to subject your listeners to. So where would you like me to go from there? You asked me the beginning question, so I'll just stop there and let you ask your next one.
Well, so that's so interesting because now when did witches and pagans come along? Because that's more recent, correct?
Yeah, well, okay, I will give you the Reader's Digest version of this because it actually is a long story.
Good.
After I had my second son, we have our family has three sons. After the birth of my second son, I decided that it was really weird that we had one magazine and the only thing that it covered was girl stuff. Thank you very much. So we attempted to start a men's magazine to parallel Sage Woman. And that dog don't hunt.
We got
12 issues into it before we just gave up on that particular methodology. Basically what it came down to is, at least back then, and I think the things have changed, but I'm not sure they've changed enough. I'm not eager to step into this again. But guys didn't want to read it. Straight guys assumed it was for gay guys. Gay guys assumed it was for straight guys. Most of the people who wanted to subscribe were women who were subscribing for their boyfriends, and we even had a hard time getting contributors. So it just was like a null set. It just didn't end up working out. So that magazine transformed at issue 13 into Pangaea, which was our co-gender magazine for pagans, basically. And Pangaea ran until issue 50. In the meantime, we started two other magazines. We started a magazine called The Blessed Bee, which ran for 8 years, and that was our pagan family magazine. And then we also had a magazine which we started, which was literally conceived by a dream in my head the day before 9/11. And I'm sure if I'd had that dream the day after 9/11, we would have just brushed it off. But we had the concept that Pangaea was a little bit on the, what's the right way of putting this? We thought the concept that Pangaea was a little intellectual and maybe there was some room in the market for a magazine that was a little hipper. And that was what New Witch was. And New Witch ran for 18 issues. And then in 2009, after we had moved to Forest Grove, our current location here in Oregon, we decided that was just too many damn magazines. And so we merged Pangaea with New Witch, and that was where Witches and Pagans was born. So altogether, Sage Woman is on issue number 89. We just published that a couple weeks ago. Witches and Pagans is I'm about to finish issue 32. We also published, and that continues its numbering from New Witch, and we also published 50 issues of Pangaea, 32 issues of The Blessed Bee, and I guess that's all of it.
Wow.
So you have them all up, and I'm just sitting in a room with literally hundreds of, well over 100 different magazines. You know, I'm kind of, you can imagine me just surrounded by magazines. They're all on racks. It's not like, you know, a cat lady's house or anything. It's all very neat and tidy. Thank you. Thanks to my triple Earth sign husband. I'm sure if it was just me, it would look the thing like, you know, you're imagining. But so basically Witches and Pagans was a merger between the more heady and kind of intellectual style of Pangaea and the more attempting to be at least hipper and more practical and magical side of New Witch, and actually turned out to be a really good decision because it's more popular than either one of them singly. New Witch unfortunately got the reputation of being for teenagers, although that was actually never our intention. And so people thought it was, you know, kind of fluffy bunny, which it wasn't really, but there was some of that in there, and it was a specific time in the 90s when pop culture magic was really, really hot. So there was that. But Witches and Pagans is a little bit more lively than Pangaea was, because Pangaea was really kind of, you know, very serious and pretty heady. So we kind of go back and forth now between witches and pagans, between the witchy side and the pagan side. So the last issue we put out was on the magical arts. Obviously, that's on the witchy side. And the one I'm just finishing up is on polytheism, and that's definitely more on the intellectual side and the religion, theology kind of side. So we kind of flip back and forth between it on that title.
I like that. I remember Pangaea well, and it was one of my favorite magazines, so I kind of like that headier stuff myself. But that's a really great balance, and certainly, I mean, a testament to kind of, you know, you having a pretty good feel for your audience. Has that been difficult to manage?
Well, which part difficult? I mean, there was three or four questions packed in there, so please elaborate.
Well, let's start. And actually, because this is a question that I'm very curious about, is how did the internet change everything for you? Because you've got a really great social media presence. So then that probably then can lead us into an audience type question.
Right. Okay. Well, in terms of the internet, of course, yes, we started our magazines before there was one. No, we did not invent it. That really was Al Gore. Well, no, it wasn't. But I throw that in. You know, what I would say is that it definitely helped us to become better known in the beginning. Now, the social media thing is kind of a different aspect. We've had a website for a really long time. We jumped into the internet as a full functioning thing fairly late. We started our blogosphere, Pagan Square, in, if memory serves, about 2011, maybe 2012. That was my husband's idea. I was very resistant because I'm a little bit of a control freak when it comes to being an editor, and so there's just no way to edit blogs. It's just kind of like physically impossible, because there's so many of them, and everybody wants to get their stuff up right away, and it wants to go live. So, you know, I mean, I have over 100 bloggers, so there's just no way in hell or any other underworld that I would be able to proofread or check the stuff. So I'm just very fussy about giving blogs to people, and then, you know, they're on their own. So that took a lot to actually break my, my editor's, you know, death grip on my brand and on the material that we put out there. But it actually has done very well for us. We're very happy with the response to Pagan Square. It's become a very large website, and so far so good. I have further expansion plans, but there's only so many hours in the day. And we are a very tiny company. Fortunately, we have somebody who works on our social media, and in fact we're integrating some additional social media tools in that right now. So yeah, we really blew up on Facebook. Fortunately, we got in before Facebook decided that natural reach should be 0.5%. So that was lucky. I mean, honestly, I can't claim to have any great, prognostication, you know, abilities or anything. It's just that I saw that Facebook was becoming a really big thing. So we started the site and it became a really big thing. We seem to be in a holding pattern at just under 350,000 likes. It's weird because nowadays Facebook takes away likes as fast as they give them. It's really interesting. If somebody drops out of Facebook, they'll take away their like as whatever. And we could talk about Facebook for weeks. But in any case, basically what it comes down to is that our social media presence and the blogosphere, in a sense, as a whole, are really good entry points for people. But they don't replace what we do in print. We also, by the way, provide our magazines digitally. So if people want to buy them as a PDF file and download them to their computer, they can do that too. We don't get a lot that way, but we get, you know, a solid trickle. Some people really like that. A lot of people try it out and don't like it and go back to paper. So paper is actually very elegant, a very portable, very handy way to receive information. And our readers are very happy there most of the time, but we do also put all our issues out digitally as well now. So that works really well for people overseas. So I would say that we've basically tried to keep up with the technology. My husband is a technologist himself. He's, you know, he's got all of the computer brains in the family. Well, some of our sons have computer brains too, but what I mean is we are literally a 3.5 person business. It's myself, my husband, my eldest son, and occasionally my youngest son pops in between his computer classes and does something for us. So that's all she wrote. And anybody imagining us in a big corporate tower, I am sitting in my daylight basement, which is actually very nice. We love our house and we love our daylight basement. And we can look out on our lovely backyard with all the wild things growing because I never take the time to actually garden. So good luck with that. But that's it. We don't have a big, you know, we don't have a big pile of people. We used to have more. The Great Recession took away a lot of that, as well, unfortunately, as our ability to pay contributors, which really still rankles me. But that is just what it is. You know, for 25 years we paid our contributors, and we currently aren't able to do that. We just don't have the profit margin we used to. But fortunately, our contributors are very, very, very generous to gift us with their knowledge and their wisdom. And we try to help out with ads and with promoting them. And also, they can use their contributions anywhere else, so we don't take, you know, exclusive rights or anything. Someday I would really like to be able to cut those checks again. I used to cut thousands of checks a year.
That's great.
I really did. Yeah. So there you are with that. In terms of you know, readership, we're pretty stable at this point. It's a good thing that we did do the social media and the internet and all that, because our newsstand is really just decimated from what it once was. I mean, Borders was our biggest chain, and they went down owing us a shit ton of money. And now Barnes & Noble is kind of doing this little pay-to-play thing. They just cut my draw for, which is in Pagans, because I wasn't willing to take, they said, we can't really put you in as many stores if you're not willing to partner with us for a $5,000 checkout ad. And I'm like, that would wipe out my profit for like 3 issues. Thank you. No.
Yeah. Jeez.
Ask your question.
Yeah. So I was curious about how Amazon has treated you. Do you work with Amazon? And
we do not work with Amazon. We do not work directly with Amazon. We do have EBSCO, who is one of only two people who sell subscriptions besides us. We've worked with EBSCO for a couple of decades, and they picked up Amazon. I see maybe, 2 or 3 subscriptions a month. I mean, we recently put up some of our back issues on Amazon, and it's been up for a month, and there's like 20 of them, and we haven't got a single sale. So I don't think it's really a good place for us. It's just a really, really big site, and it's nice when we see those, but given that they, you know, that they whack off a nice hefty percentage to keep for themselves, you know, I'd rather people subscribe with us directly. We also are now represented by magazines.com, so that's nice. Similarly, they whack off a piece for themselves, but, you know, it's nice to see these ancillary subscriptions, but candidly, the vast majority of our subscriptions and single issue sales come from either Newsstand or from our own website, which is nice because it means I don't have to worry about a lot of overhead because we handle that all ourselves. But our biggest problem is for people to know we exist, which is really nice that, you know, Witches and Pagans blew up to be such a huge social media presence. Sage Woman is literally 1/20th of the size. I think it's because it doesn't have the W word in there.
Right. You know, it's a buzzword, isn't it? It's so funny.
Yeah. Well, you can also tell from, you know, the responses that I get from, you know, because I pick up all of the Witches and Pagans and the Sage Woman, you know, back channel, you know, mail, the Facebook mail, and a lot of people have no clue. Sometimes that's okay. Sometimes the no clue they don't have involves me trying to hex someone or something on their behalf, and that's not so much fun, but it's easy enough to bat them off.
Right. Yeah. Social media and the messages that I think we all get having, you know, spiritual sites or sites, you know, kind of in that realm, it's always interesting. We've worked very hard with Mother House. Yeah, getting it up, the numbers up, because obviously we came in much later. And but still, oh my gosh, it's like entertaining. You could probably fill books with entertaining emails.
Oh, believe me. I mean, you have no idea. The ones that actually take the time are the ones that show up with the fluffy ears on, the bunny ears, and they say, I don't know anything. What goddess should I worship? And you're like, oh, God, this could take weeks.
Yeah.
So
I usually will try, especially
because I can never tell, you know, what religion they come from. A kind of startling number of these come from overseas, which always flummoxes me, actually. So I will usually ask them, you know, where are you actually calling from, you know, and also, you know, what spirituality were you raised in, or what are you familiar with, or what have you done earlier, you know? So it's kind of interesting. Also, the number of people who have asked for spell work for hire has just skyrocketed. When I was first doing this stuff at the Facebook page, it was fairly rare. And previously in my time, you know, in the community, it was almost unknown. People just wouldn't email someone. Well, okay, so email is a thing, obviously. So before email, that didn't happen. Yeah. But people didn't used to write letters to me and ask me to take off curses. And now that's pretty much routine.
Wow.
I actually send them to someone. I actually know someone. She's worked for me. She lives in the Canary Islands off of Spain. She's a very cool person, and I send them to her. I don't know. A lot of them want you to do it for free, so obviously that's not going to happen. But she's very serious. She wrote an article in the last issue of Witches and Pagans about her work in Canarian style root magic, and she's the real deal. So I send them to her because I don't do that for hire. I wouldn't do it for somebody who just emailed me because, holy cow, who knows what you're getting into. But that's her profession.
Right.
So. But that happens all the time
fantastic.
Now.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
It is really interesting because
yeah.
It's a really strong change. I recently had an editorial where I, you know, opined about how wonderful it was back when We All Come From the Goddess was the pagan national anthem. And there were a few people who thought that I was full of it. in fact, I'm printing one of their letters in this next issue, who definitely thinks I am full of it. But there was a different kind of feel to the community, I think, in decades past. It hasn't happened. Sage Woman hasn't changed very much. That's kind of deliberate on my part because women love their damn Sage Woman. They really, really, really love it, and I love it too, and it saved my life more than once just because I've had my struggles with depression and stuff like that, and, you know, Sage Woman is really special and wonderful, and people don't really want me to change her. Every time I try, I get my butt kicked.
Yeah.
I put up a few years ago, I put up a thing on Facebook and said, I'm thinking about doing an issue on women and men, and I got completely... Oh, everybody said, oh, it's such a wonderful idea. Oh, please do it. Oh, please do it. So I went ahead and did it. Worst selling issue ever.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so that just only goes to show that the people, either A, the people who are on Facebook were not people who actually bought the magazine, or B, they were lying, or C, I have no idea.
I think actually, you know, interestingly, if I had to guess about Sage Woman, I would say that you probably have a lot of loyal subscribers who are interested in the imprint and probably not engaging as much on Witches and Pagans. But
yeah.
That would
well,
be...
Well, you know what? We have about a 65% overlap.
Interesting. Wow.
We have a really, really strong overlap. When we had more titles... then people had to divide up their loyalty. And we haven't even talked about Crone yet, so I will briefly note that we ended Crone last fall. This was yet another too tight a niche, cannot make that dog hunt kind of situation. I love that title. I really, really appreciated the – I'm very proud of the 8 issues I put out, and I really loved it. But the finances sucked from day one because nobody wants to advertise in a magazine about becoming an old woman. Although we could have theoretically sold it to, you know, the multi-pharmaceuticals, but we really didn't want to go there. and Newsstand, Frank flat out refused us. They said there was not a category for the title, so don't even bother. So we didn't have any ad revenue, and we didn't have any Newsstand revenue, and the subscribers were almost entirely based on Sage Woman, and because it was mostly older women, some of them felt like they financially had to make a choice between the titles, so instead of helping Sage Woman grow, it actually damaged Sage Woman in terms of finances.
Right.
So we had to make the uncomfortable decision, the necessary decision to let it go. So, but, you know, Sage Woman is really strong at this point, which isn't Pagans is strong at this point. Pagan Square is a really strong site, and we're very happy with how it's performing. I have grandiose ambitions that I would love to have a pagan networking site. I mean, there's a lot of things I would love to do. I've been trying to get a pagan review site up for a couple of years, but there really is only so many hours in the day.
Right. Yeah. And those are big projects. I mean, you know,
those are big projects.
I
mean, getting this off the ground was crazy. So, you know.
Now, do you think that Crone, the information and content from Crone, I mean, that seems like it would be easily transferable to Sage Woman, you know, for that audience.
Well, yes and no. There is yes and no. So I'm gonna give the yes and I'm gonna give the no. In terms of style, they're very, very similar. They both emphasized, you know, Crone emphasized, as Sage Woman does now, the personal stories of the women who are writing. So nobody's going to get up in Crone and nobody's going to get up in Sage Woman and tell you how it has to be. That is like complete verboten, big no-no editorially for us to preach or teach or try to tell other people that we know better than they do. So it's just about sharing your stories. The difference, though, was that Crone was a secular title, although it was goddess-influenced, it was not goddess-centric. And that was because it was age-centric, so it was pretty much postmenopausal, but it was not specifically sectarian. So some of it ports over, and a lot of it does not. The other thing is that if I load Sage Woman up too much with all the Crone stuff, that's going to drive off the younger women. Or at least that's my perception. I had a lot of people that were Crone age who didn't like the Crone stuff because they said it was depressing. So, I mean, I actually had people call me up and yell at me.
Oh, my goodness.
You've got this article. You've got this. This is so depressing. You're talking about this woman who got Alzheimer's. Well, yeah, but I'm talking about this wonderful group of women who became a circle around her and who help her get around and who make her life better. And I thought it was actually that particular article was my favorite one of any that I ever published in Crone. It was an amazing article about this group of women who gathered around their friend who was having living with Alzheimer's, and how, you know, they basically made a list of, you know, who would come and see her when, and they had a schedule and a calendar, and it was just awesome. And it was called, I think, Supporting Sunny, and it made me cry when I was editing it. I thought it was the most awesome thing since ever, but I did get some people complain because it was too depressing. And
now, isn't
so there's just, you know, ageism is a thing.
And, you know, that's a very interesting, it's a kind of an interesting stance because, you know, coming from goddess spirituality, I don't really encounter that. In fact, I'm always saying to my contributors on Mother House, I'd like more Crone stuff. Hello, ladies. You know, because it does very well, especially the story. So that's very interesting. And maybe it's because it was not goddess-centric. I think maybe with the goddess-centric portion.
Well, these were Sage Woman readers who were complaining.
Yeah.
So
really? Oh, my
God. These were Sage Woman readers, and they were like, eh. Mm-hmm. So, You know, here's the thing, okay? Sage Woman has a very specific point of view, and Sage Woman is always trying to be uplifting and trying to be celebratory. That's what I have always made, you know, a center point of our magazine's editorial. You will not find, you know, downer stories in Sage Woman because it's a sanctuary. And that doesn't mean that those things aren't important, which is one of the reasons I did start Crown, you know. But it's intended to be something that you get home at the end of the day and it's in your mailbox and you sit down and maybe you draw a bath or maybe you just sit in your favorite chair and it makes you feel, you know, at ease and the love of the goddess is all around you. And maybe for some people, some of those rather harsh realities that we covered in Crone were just a little not what they were looking for. I don't really know.
Yeah.
So
very interesting. Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
So what are some of your favorite topics overall that's been covered maybe for 2016? What are some of the trends that have been really fun?
Well, of course,
for
2016, we haven't gotten very far into that yet. But I can talk about what we're going to be doing. So this issue of Sage Woman was Roots and Wings, and there were a lot of multi-generational stories in that I really, really enjoyed. I had one particular story I had literally been holding for 5 years. When I emailed the author, she was just like, wow, yeah, I haven't published that yet. so that was really a lot of fun. I actually am really excited about our next issue of Sage Woman. It's a favorite topic of mine. I cannot believe it's taken me 25 years to get around to it. And that's going to be on the magic of trees, because I am a super-duper huge tree person. And it's amazing that I haven't done this earlier. I don't even know why. But so I'm really looking forward to that one. And then we have one on Worlds of Fairy, and I know that'll be a huge, huge success. Everybody's crazy about fairy. So those are the two that we're planning for the rest of 2016 and then early into 2017. And then I came up, you know, it's funny, Sage Woman, all these themes for both Sage Woman and for Witches and Pagans, they just show up.
Yeah.
I'm pretty fussy about which ones I pick because I have a tendency to live them out in my real life. And a couple of them early on just about killed me. So I always joke that someday I'm going to have an issue on shoes. I'll probably be buried under a
track. I'm all about that. Yeah.
Actually, I had about 3 pairs of shoes, so I wouldn't have much to say. So I probably should skip that one. But so the next issue after Worlds of Fairy is going to be Our Heart's Desire, and I have no idea what that means. It just came to me, kind of, sort of, almost in a dream thing, and I said, okay, I guess I'll do that. I did try to do. I had previously planned an issue called Sunrise Sunset for that particular spot, and just it hit like a wet thud in terms of submissions. Nobody seemed to know what the hell I was talking about. And since I couldn't actually articulate it either, I decided to get rid of that one. Maybe we'll bring it back some other time. The other one I never can seem to get is Beginnings. I have tried 3 times to do a Beginnings issue, and it has always failed for lack of submissions. Everybody wants to write about endings. So, there we are. That's sort of curious.
Yeah,
it is. I would have thought that would be an absolute, you know, that would be great. But maybe people don't want to write about Beginnings because they don't know what the rest of the story is going to be yet.
Yeah, that's very interesting, though, because I would think that would be a hot topic. So that's kind of interesting to me. That wouldn't take off. Yeah.
Yeah, it just didn't take off. Well, everything has to come in over the transom. I don't have any paid writers. And even when I did pay people, I never, you know, I don't assign things to people and say, hey, you know, do this. You know, that was not my style. So we are always very dependent on whatever shows up, which of course is very cool because it means it's all a big, like, it's like Christmas every day in my inbox. Or in that case, Solstice every day. You can tell I was raised Christian. So we have those 3 issues coming up for Sage Woman. I'm actually looking on my computer right now because I actually have a Excel spreadsheet, because can I keep this all in my head? Not necessarily.
No.
So I want to, I mean, I know what the next one up is, but I actually had one that I came up with recently I was really excited about, so I wanted to see if I'd already mentioned it. So here's my schedule. There we go. So Sage Woman, there we are, Sage Woman update. La-di-da. Yeah, okay, so it's Roots and Wings, which I just put out, Magic of Trees, Worlds of Fairy, Our Heart's Desire, and then in 2017 I have two that I just pre-scheduled, one on Awakening and the other one on Our Inner Fire. So we'll see how those pencil out when we get there. That'll be a while off,
yeah.
So, you know. And then I've got a whole pile of things piled up for Witches and Pagans. So we did our Arts of Magic issue in December, and that was a lot of fun. And that had a lot of really, you know, serious down to it kind of discussions about spellcrafting, which, you know, like I said, has become seemingly a much bigger part of pagan culture than when I came in. It was probably always out, probably wasn't exposed. I mean, I probably just didn't go in those circles, I'm thinking.
I think there were probably those that were more, you know, attracted to the spells, and then those who were attracted more to the devotional side of things,
mm-hmm.
or ritual, you know. So that's
mm-hmm.
kind of interesting to me, too. But, definitely lots of weird spell stuff going on, like out in Etsy world and everything, too.
Oh, gosh. Don't get me started on Etsy world. Oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean, I completely kind of grok where that's coming from. And the funny thing is that, and eBay previous to that, it all becomes very complicated because, you know, do I really think that, you know, it would be cool to have a spell for a bigger ass? I mean, seriously, this is kind of the notorious eBay. I've always wondered why anyone would want that, since I have the opposite issue. So honestly, if I was going to have a spell for something to do with the size of my butt, it wouldn't be making it bigger. But I may be missing something here. It would be going the other direction. But I think I'm missing something here. So that's fine. But I guess the point being is that the thing that is the most interesting to me about the spellcrafting that I run into these days, the requests, are that they can frequently be for things that that mundane methods would work for. I had somebody ask me the other day for a spell to fix a brown recluse bite. And I'm like, the spell? It's called 911.
Yeah. That's cool. Antibiotic cream in the ER. Yeah, that'd be about it.
Yeah. And she waited around, and then she did have to do the ER thing. And, you know, there seem to be a lot of people that I totally get the empowerment of spell work. And like most women I know, I do less than I used to. When I was younger, I did a lot more spell casting than I do now. I get that, but I don't get when there's a perfectly easy and reasonable way to deal with something mundanely why you would use that. So it's actually kind of interesting, and I'm just still kind of mulling around about that. So I was really happy with the Arts of Magic issue. I thought it turned out really well. The one I'm just finishing is on polytheism, which I do not know how much you follow this. So there is a lot of screaming and yelling in the pagan blogosphere about various forms of polytheism, or not polytheism, or devotional polytheism, or atheist polytheism, or all kinds of things right now. And I have most of the screaming parties in the same issue, but fortunately, they're not allowed to scream at each other because it's on paper.
Right.
So I'll be real excited to see how this issue actually goes over. I'm really happy with all the essays. I think they're all very legitimate point of views, and I'm really excited about the issue. But I think that if they're all in the same room, it might just burst into spontaneous flame. So this is a place where print is kind of cool, or the print style, even if it's digital, is kind of cool. And actually has a cooling sort of effect, in the sense that it's, you know, you don't get that immediate kind of hyping up that the internet can bring, where people can blog and someone can write a nasty comment, and then someone writes a nasty comment responding to the nasty comment, and the next thing you know, someone writes a nasty blog in response to the nasty comment on the other nasty blog, and it just all goes up in smoke. So
flame
I'm happy
war.
That. Pardon?
Yeah. Flame wars. I mean, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one way in which I really enjoy still being involved in the community in a way that's a little bit, takes a step back from that. So I'll be interested to see how this one goes over. This is obviously the Pangaea of the set, right? The last one was a New Witch style art issue on magic, and this one is a polytheism, which is definitely sort of more heady. Coming in the rest of the year, I actually have all the way into 2018 planned. Oh my God, why? We have a tarot and divination issue in the fall. I know that one's going to be huge, or as someone said, it would say huge. and then next spring, we've got a gods and goddesses issue, a creating ritual issue coming up. I just slated in one called Natural Paganism. I was going to call that Paganism Without the Gods, but I decided that was too negative. So since I've, you know, given over an issue on polytheism, which is very specifically about deity worship, and have a gods and goddesses issue coming up, I figured it was time to give, you know, in the fall of 2017, the other side, you know, the naturalist and the humanist pagans, an issue to talk about that, which, you know, is a big thing. And it's odd because I used to be one of them, and then I started having close encounters with deities. So now I'm both, which only works if you're a Libra, which I am.
Right. As am I. So,
there you go. We have something in common. Isn't that cool? I mean, I'm sure we have lots of things in common, but that's a nice one.
So
that's kind of what's coming up for us.
Gosh, busy, Anne. That's very, very busy.
You think? I didn't even mention the plant allies, shamanism, and signs and portents issues for 2018, but there I just did.
Wow. I got to tell you, the plant allies is a very big deal right now.
Yes, it is.
You know, we've seen quite a bit about that, too. So very interesting.
Yeah.
So if people are interested in writing for you, you know, I know for Sage Woman, it's sagewoman.com, and you can find out about submissions and everything, but from an editor standpoint, what are you looking for?
Well, if we confine ourselves to Sage Woman, it makes it pretty straightforward, which is basically get a hold of any recent edition, and it will have our upcoming themes. What I am always looking for is I'm always looking, first of all, it's woman only. We don't ask for blood samples or DNA tests. We just take your word for it. So that's our explicit policy and has always been. I just wanted to get that out of the way. Then it's basically a first-person point of view, a story. It's basically the way Sage Women works is that you tell the story as if you were sitting around in a room with a bunch of other women, and it was a storytelling circle. So it is in a literary sense, right? So it is a little more polished probably than you would get for actually sitting around. But that's basically the idea, is that we're telling our stories. So it's important that it has personal voice. One of my biggest problems as an editor is I get wonderful submissions from women in the academy, which is to say, you know, in higher ed and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them have wonderful stories to tell, but they have had their personal voice pretty much whipped out of them by, you know, by the rigors of the academic world. And so I sometimes have to coach them a little into speaking from the heart. But that would be the number one thing, is speaking from the heart. Sage Woman is about telling our story. It's not about how that story is received. It's not about how someone else is going to use your story. It's just, this is what happened to me, and hopefully it's uplifting. Because hopefully you have faced a challenge in your life, because we all have, you know, only 20 million of them, and have come through it on the other side. So that's the intention of Sage Woman. I don't care if the writer has ever been published before. Don't bother to send me either clips or your resume. It doesn't matter. what matters is really, I mean, I get all the stories in, I collect them all, and I never accept anything until I've closed the, you know, editorial for a specific issue. And then I read them all. And there's a couple things that stand out. First of all, hopefully you have a story to tell, because if what you really want to do is preach a sermon, this isn't that place. And, you know, that's not what we're about. So hopefully it's a story that you're sharing and you're telling it from your own experience, so we don't take any fiction. People have asked us if we could take fiction, and we publish fiction, which isn't pagans. But because Sage Woman is all first person, I think it would be very confusing to our readers if, you know, they read all of these true stories and then all of a sudden there was one that was, you know, that was fictional. So we don't take any fiction. And just tell it like it is. In terms of specifics, the average Sage Woman story that's accepted is around 2,000 words. That's not a hard and fast rule. I've published as long as 4,000 and as short as 1,000. Hopefully it has a central focus. Hopefully you're really good at telling details about your lived experience. So it shouldn't all be happening in your head, because I like stories that root in the real world, which doesn't mean that the mystical world isn't real. But if you can't get feet on the ground, it's hard for people to relate to.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of what it comes down to. We will accept material from people writing under pseudonyms. You know, you don't have to out yourself. What else? I don't know. You know, honestly, I think Sage Woman is really, really consistent. So if you read, you know, a few issues, you know, you'll know it when you see it.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the beauties of Sage Woman, is that it is very consistent.
Yeah. Hopefully that doesn't make it boring, but our readers don't seem to think so.
Right. Exactly. That's wonderful.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, now, you have started Sage Woman blogs online, and how is that going?
Yeah. Oh, that's just fun. It's interesting. The Sage Woman blogs exist at the Pagan Square blogosphere because, well, that just got really big, and it seemed ridiculous to hive Sage Woman off on a site that doesn't get as much traffic. So it does work. I will say that they do not seem to be quite as vibrant as the other blogs on the site, and I'm not sure why that is. It could be that Sage Woman is more of a long form kind of experience, but I'm really happy to have that. And people want to write a blog for us, they just need to contact me under the usual channels, and then they're going to have to show me some writing. And the reason for that is because, as I mentioned at the very beginning, I don't have any way to edit things, so I need to know that they're a good writer. Blogs are actually, as far as I'm concerned, blogs are harder. I think blog writing is really way, way harder. And the reason, there's a couple reasons. One is that generally there's a much higher throughput. We ask our blog writers to write a post a month. And that may not sound like very much, but it's a lot. A lot of blogs, they want you to write, you know, every week, or God forbid, every day. And I would shoot myself if I had to do that. little known fact, I am the world's slowest writer. My editorials take me sometimes several days to write. If I'm super on a roll, I can put one out in 3 or 4 hours, but a lot of times I agonize about them for a really long time. So for all the people who think I should write a book, not going to happen. Although I have seriously considered gathering up my Sage Woman editorials, because a lot of people seem to really like them. And someday I'll probably put that together into a collection. So that'll be fun. Maybe for issue 100, which is coming faster than it looks.
Right. Oh, my goodness.
We just put out 89, so 100 will be here before I can blink. But in any case, basically just approach me. I'm very approachable. My phone number is printed in the magazine. My husband keeps taking my email out of the magazine and wanting people to email me through the contact form. Well, there I do get a lot of spam.
I bet you do.
Yeah, I have a very good spam filter, which is a damn good thing. But you know, I send and receive somewhere in the 100 to 200 email range a day, so it's kind of ludicrous. But you know, email me at editor2@bbimedia.com, or there is stuff online that you can get to from Sage Woman, you can get to from Witches and Pagans. You can always get a hold of me via Facebook too, which a lot of people now query me via Facebook, so that works fine. As far as Witches and Pagans, because I did want to mention that briefly, is that in terms of submissions there, it is way more different styles. In that case, it's not so much personal, it's more a journalistic style. And you don't have to show me clips, but be a good writer. Because Witches and Pagans, we're trying really hard to have high editorial standards for the quality of our writing and for people to be able to explain things clearly, whether they are, you know, the difference between monism and polytheism, like in our recent issue that I'm about to put out, which is way heady stuff. And boy, was that a bitch to edit, because I had all of these really heady articles that I was struggling. I have a Master of Divinity, and some of it was over my head. The writers were all awesome, and they worked with me, and it was perfect. But if they're practical, then they need to be clear and functional. Even if they're, you know, something that's very philosophical, then it needs to be accessible. It's important that it's good writing, but it also is important that we don't use a lot of jargon, because a lot of our readers come to us on newsstand, and they may walk into a Barnes & Noble and pick up a copy of the magazine and take it to the register and check out. This may be the first time they've ever been exposed to paganism, ever. I know that's crazy, and people don't believe me, but it's true. Happens all the time.
Right. Yeah. I know. Well, we live like kind of in a bubble. And then, so that's a really great, you know, way to look at things, you know, to manage your editing. I think that's very smart.
Well, you know, and the thing is that I don't want our stuff to talk down. I'm not asking people to speak in, you know, baby Wicca or anything. It's just a question of being able to read things without having to pull out, you know, I don't know, the Dictionary of Foreign Animals or something from, you know, from Buffy. You know, imagining the big room with the librarian. You know, you shouldn't have to be from the librarians in order to understand our material. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
There, I'm making another pop culture joke. So that's kind of what we're on about. What else would you like to ask me? We have officially 4 minutes left on my book.
No.
And I've just babbled the whole thing away.
I think it's fantastic, though. It's, you know, it's a really great snapshot into, you know, what's going on, you know, with Witches and Pagans and Sage Woman. And the differences are really fascinating, I think, you know, because goddess spirituality has really, in my opinion, so maybe this is the next question, is, you know, to me, goddess spirituality has really begun to differentiate itself from general paganism. Do you agree with that?
Well, you know, I think actually that the jury is out. There is a lot of goddess spirituality which is generational. And so the real question is, there was a time not that long ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, that I thought goddess spirituality was entirely generational. And that I'm relatively young. I'm 56. And a lot of the people that a lot of the people that we think of as important in the goddess spirituality movement are older than me. And then there's the whole, you know, fight over, you know, what does the word woman even mean, and trans women and all that kind of stuff, which I won't even begin to get into that keg of worms. But I at one point wondered whether goddess spirituality would actually fade away about the time that I passed on, or roughly then. That doesn't actually seem to be the case. We seem to be seeing interest from women, from younger women, that we didn't used to see. So that, I'm not sure where that's coming from, but I'm really excited and happy about it. I don't know whether they're going to separate or not. It's certainly possible to think of goddess spirituality as, you know, a denomination within the larger pagan tent. I mean, the pagan tent has got is really straining at the seams and may or may not actually even remain a tent much longer because now we have so many things under that rubric that it's hard to tell. And there's a lot of very sectarian fights going on right now. I mean, again, don't want to get into that because you all are mostly goddess oriented. But I would say that goddess spirituality is definitely a sub-sector. And it doesn't always have, it's true that it doesn't always have the same thing, but we have 65% overlap in our readership. So I think that really means that people like what we do.
That's fantastic. Well, that's really interesting.
I think that's what that means. I'm not sure it means, I mean, reading is a very personal experience. So most of our readers are still solitaries. So there's that. That has been that way since the start.
I do believe that the internet has certainly given us, and I'm going to speak more obviously to the goddess spirituality, the opportunity to create community online. You know, with Mother House, we do our goddess full moon groups online. We do live new moon rituals by video online. They've been very popular, and people really feel connected. So for me, the technology, is just fantastic because it gives the opportunity for people living in kind of, you know, communities that maybe aren't as accepting or that feel like they're solitary, a way to connect without outing themselves, so to speak, or having to explain, you know, why they're wandering the streets in flowy robes and those kind of things.
Or we're still skyclad.
Yes, exactly. Well, you know, I do kind of laugh now, you know, even 10 years ago when people would say, well, you know, kind of, what are you? Like, what do you do? And I say, oh, I'm a goddess worshiper. And they go, oh, so you're a witch. And now they actually will say to me, oh, so you do yoga, which I think is hysterically funny. I mean, I'm like going, that's
yes.
Really?
Well, I'm afraid we've lost control of the word.
Yes.
If we ever had it. Well, okay, here's an example, and we could go on for another hour on this, so I don't know how that works, but Beyonce's thing just came out, right? It's just the thing that came out this morning, Lemonade.
Lemonade.
Okay.
Yep.
And I've been following some threads on Facebook that are suggesting that it was all basically it was all dedicated to Oshun. And so everything about Lemonade is actually about Oshun, which is really an interesting thought.
I'll tell you very quickly, you know, I'm an Aberisha. I'm a daughter of Oshun. And
so am I.
I have to tell you, I put that on this morning and my jaw dropped. I was like going, are you like kidding me? I mean, so as a daughter of Oshun, I sat here wrapped this morning in the middle of my Monday morning. I didn't do anything but sip coffee and stare at it going, oh, my goddess. Awesome.
Yeah, so was this actually deliberate? Was it the goddess speaking to us? Who knows? But in terms of, like, you know, pop culture, in terms of the use of the word goddess, we've definitely – It's blossomed into something that is vastly beyond the pagan community. Of course, then you know, you also get it commercialized, and you get, you know, Athena, you know, razors for your legs or something or whatever. So you can't even use the word goddess as a search term anymore.
Oh yeah, forget that. Yeah.
That's you don't even want to go there at all, which is sad. But it's very interesting, and I definitely think that that the story is still being written, I think.
Fabulous.
And it
will be long after
we're gone and moving on. So, I really find you really fun to talk to, so we should do this again sometime soon.
I would love that. You are welcome back anytime. We'll get you scheduled maybe for the fall. We could talk about some fun, more of our Samhain and witchy fall content kind of stuff going on.
Sure, that would be fun.
And,
I would love it.
You know, and thank you so much for what you do for the community and the greater community, because it is heroic to an extent.
Oh. Well, I'm just really lucky it's my day job. I mean, not too many people. I mean, I am very, very, very aware of how blessed, you know, I am to be able to do this. And that's just too awesome. So please, you know, I would say to any of your listeners out there, if you are not familiar with our magazine, Sage Woman or Witches and Pagans, give me a call or drop a line via Facebook or to my email at editor2@bbimedia.com, and I'll be happy to send you a sample issue.
There you go.
Free.
Yeah. Yay! Okay.
Yay, well, so there you go.
Thank you so very, very much. I really appreciate
you
coming on. It was so fun to talk about all this. I mean, it's so interesting to me. So thank you for your time, and have an absolutely fantastic evening.
You too. All right. Thanks so much.
Good. Thanks,
bye-bye.
Anne. Blessings.
All right.
And to all of our listeners, you are a blessing as well, and so grateful for you. So make sure you check out sagewoman.com, bbimedia.com, we're going to get witchesandpagans.com, and just peruse. Get over there to Pagan Square, take a look around. There's a lot of really interesting things going on, and sometimes in our little goddess spirituality bubble, we miss some of the things going on in the greater community. So, you know, take a peek out, see what happens. Take Anne up on her offer and get a free copy of Sage Woman. You'll love it. And as in closing, let's see, we've got Pamela Eakins coming. We're going to talk priestess stuff this Thursday night. I can't wait. 8 o'clock Eastern is the next Goddess Live Radio. Mystery School of the Goddess.net. Check out the new courses. We've got Beltane courses happening and Celestial Magic and Intimate Bliss, all good stuff. And MotherHouseOfTheGoddess.com, obviously, for your daily content. My darlings, thank you so much. Happy Monday. Talk to you closer to the Mercury retrograde. Hang in there, everybody, and bright, bright blessings.